Moving topside. It was Erin, and her voice was shaky. In itself, a rare thing. What do you see?
I'm not sure.
Too far away to tell. Stay out of sight, Erin. That's an order. As if in reply, a screech sounded, but it wasn't coming from outside or over the comm. Michael rounded the landing, pointing his rifle down into the darkness. Around the next corner, an orange glow pulsed like a heartbeat, growing brighter by the second. The same clanking sound he had heard earlier came from the depths of the stairwell. This didn't sound like a single siren. It sounded like a pack of them. He moved his finger inside the trigger guard, ready to blast the mutant freaks back into whatever hell had spawned them. Another wave of static rushed over the channel.
Michael, we're on the move, headed topside.
This time it was Layla. His eyes darted back to the HUD. The beacons were moving faster. Les and Layla were running.
I'm on a stairwell about 5 floors down, he whispered. I see something. A red...
What? Commander, you're breaking up, Les said.
I see a red...
The electronic screech that followed shut him up. Clanking metal and claws on concrete echoed up the stairwell, and Michael gripped his rifle tighter.
Come on, you freaks. Show your ugly faces.
The pack of sirens was right around the corner now. Layla's voice flooded the channel again.
Michael, get out of there!
He knew that running would just delay the inevitable, assuming he could even run up the stairs at all. It hurt worse to climb than to run. He was going to have to face them sooner or later.
I'm standing my ground, he said. You two get topside with Erin. She'll cover you.
Michael, you can't fight, Les said, before another wail cut him off. This one was different from the electronic shriek the sirens made back on the surface. Michael stared at the orange glow.
What the hell was giving off that light?
He moved his finger onto the trigger, ready to unleash a flurry of automatic fire. The light intensified, spreading over the walls. A shadow bounded up the stairs, and he got his first glimpse of the monster. The image of an elongated head with horns, a humanoid torso, and long claws moved over the walls. This was no siren. Michael pulled the trigger as soon as the beast came into view, a humanoid figure wearing the skull of a cow. The orange light blazed out of the bone eye sockets, emanating from an orange visor behind the open mouth of the cow skull. Bullets shattered the bone armor the creature wore and punched into metal behind it. The skull reared back, and the beast let out a roar that sent a shiver prickling over his flesh. He continued firing, the muzzle flash mixing with the eerie orange glow. Empty casings bounced off the stairs as the rounds broke off more and more of the bones covering the metal body. The din of gunfire cracked and echoed, mixing with the electronic sounds of rage. By the time he emptied the magazine, the skull was halfway broken off, revealing a humanoid metal skull. The creature, whatever it was, stumbled backward, hitting the wall so hard the front plate of bones covering its chest fell and shattered on the ground. A battery unit, the source of the orange light, glowed in the center of its chest. The sight played tricks on Michael's mind, and for a moment he thought he was staring at some demon helldiver who had come back from the dead. But this was no man. This wasn't even a beast. The orange light glowing from the center of the metal skin was an engine powering a machine. An AI. The defectors that had killed Dr. Diaz and his team weren't human after all, and they had been here all this time, waiting for the next humans to murder.
Michael, run!
Layla shouted over the comms. Her words snapped him back into action. He took a few backward steps up the stairs while reaching for another magazine. Before he could punch it into the carbine, a second machine emerged behind the first. This one wore the bones of multiple animals and humans. A reptilian skull crested the top of a humanoid face. It raised a black weapon with a curved olive handle and thin muzzle. Michael brought his rifle up to fire, but the robot got in the first shot. A dazzling blue bolt sizzled through the air. He felt something cold rip through his arm. His mind sent a message to his finger to pull the trigger, but his finger didn't respond. The gun fell in two pieces. It took him a few seconds to understand that the bolt had sliced the weapon in two, and another second to realize that the same blue bolt had severed his right arm a few inches below the shoulder. He watched the weapon clatter onto the stairs with his finger still in the trigger guard. Another blue bolt blasted the air next to his helmet and sliced into the wall behind him. He moved to his right just in time to avoid a third bolt, which hit the overhead, shattering a light and darkening the stairwell above him. More bolts sizzled through the air. A voice yelled out, followed by muzzle flashes from behind the two machines. The stairwell lit up with red and blue flashes. Rounds slammed into the bone-covered machines. The machine with the broken cow head fell to the floor, and Michael crashed to his knees on the landing above it, looking down the stairwell in horror. At the bottom of the next landing, a tall figure emerged with a blaster.
Les.
Les put the gun muzzle against the head of the robot that had shot Michael. The fiery blast took off the top of the skull, and sparks erupted off the metal beneath. Layla ran past Les and bounded up the stairs toward Michael.
Michael, oh my God!
She bent down and put a hand under the armpit of his good arm while Les continued firing at the other hostiles. The second one wouldn't go down, and the first was starting to get back on its feet. Their metallic shells deflected the 5.56mm rounds as if they were rocks flung by a child.
Run! Les yelled. Get him out of here!
Michael pulled the blaster out of his holster as she helped him up. Though he wasn't used to shooting with his left hand, he managed to fire both shotgun rounds into the struggling machine on the landing below. The buckshot slammed into the neck and torso, sending it careening past Les and crashing down the stairs. An electronic wail followed as it toppled down into darkness, the orange light fading like a guttering candle. Michael dropped the gun, his vision fading in and out as Layla helped him to his feet. Time seemed to slow to an agonizing pace, and his vision grew blurry as if he were looking through ice. He looked down at the stump where his arm had been. He could see that well enough. The skin was glowing red, still hot from the laser bolt. The heat had cauterized the wound, but he had lost all the blood in the arm that now lay on the landing.
"My arm," he mumbled. "You can't leave my arm."
"Move!"
Layla yelled as she helped him up the stairwell. More gunfire cracked behind them, and Michael heard Aaron's voice over the channel.
"We got company topside!"
Katrina chewed on her fingernail as she listened to the audio transmissions. Gunfire, screeches, and the intermittent yelling of her friends on the surface filled the bridge. Her crew all listened from their stations, some flinching at the sounds of the shouts.
"We have to do something," she said.
The divers had been fighting for over an hour at Red Sphere, and were now pinned down.
"Raptor One, do you copy?"
Katrina said into her headset. A wave of static replied, then a scream.
"They're flanking us!"
Katrina couldn't be sure who had yelled that.
"Raptor Two, do you copy?"
she said. A flurry of white noise filled the channel.
"Raptor Three, do you copy? Does anyone copy?"
The comlink went dead a beat later, and her gut sank as white noise filled the room. Her helldivers were dying down there. She had to do something. Bronson got up from his station, his hand on his lower back. He just looked at Katrina without speaking. Ada and Dave didn't say a word either.
"Bronson, are you sure we can't land on Red Sphere?" Katrina asked.
He shook his head.
"I hate saying it, Captain, but we would likely go down in a ball of fire if we tried to get through that rogue pocket of electricity. It may be possible for a smaller object to make it through, but we're way too big to avoid getting hit by lightning."
"But our exterior is built to withstand some direct hits," Dave said.
"Some, yes," Bronson said.
Katrina closed her eyes.
A smaller object.
There was only one thing left to do.
"You have the bridge, Ensign White."
Bronson stiffened, his stooped back almost straight. She started across the room, the eyes of her staff on her.
"Where are you going, ma'am?"
Ada asked, standing at her station. At the hatch, Katrina stopped and turned.
"I'm going to dive and save our friends. Move the ship back into position over Red Sphere."
"By yourself?" Dave said.
"Ma'am, I don't think that's a good idea, Captain," Bronson said, finishing Dave's sentence.
"We have no choice," Katrina replied. "Tell the green divers to meet me in the launch bay. They have 15 minutes. In the meantime, lower us to 5,000 feet, just shy of that rogue pocket."
Ada and Dave exchanged a glance, but Bronson simply nodded.
The old man still knew how to follow an order. She ran down the passage where she passed several militia soldiers and then a half-dozen engineers and farmers. A warning sounded, and an automated female voice flooded the hallways.
Be advised. We are moving from our current location and could experience turbulence. Please take appropriate precautions.
Katrina walked faster, her mind racing as she worked her way toward the launch bay. What she had made out of the diver's transmissions made her blood run cold. The enemy on the surface wasn't sirens. The defectors were something even worse. At least sirens could be killed. These were killing machines powered by a powerful AI. Would Timothy feel any loyalty to them? Could she trust him? Could X trust him? She had considered ordering Samson to reactivate the AI on the Hive, but this info made her wonder. Katrina shook away the questions and focused on the new mission. There was only one way to help the other divers. By diving. When she got to the launch bay, the green divers had all mustered. Trey was the first to speak.
Captain, what's going on? Is my dad okay?
We have a problem on the surface, she replied, halting right in front of the group.
I don't have much time to explain, so listen up. There are machines down there. The same machines that I believe killed Dr. Diaz and his team. I'm not sure where they came from, but I know they will kill the divers if we don't do something to help them.
Robots? Vish asked, rubbing the gold hoop in his ear as if it might bring him luck. Jaideep tilted his head.
Like AIs?
Killer AIs, Katrina said. Programmed to destroy humanity.
We have to get down there, Trey said, his eyes burning with worry.
Jed agreed.
Commander Everhart and the others need our help.
Katrina gave a look that silenced everyone. We can't bring the ship all the way down to the surface. It's too big a risk. But I can get us close. I just can't do this on my own. I need volunteers to go with me. It didn't surprise her when Trey's hand shot up. No other hands joined his.
Is there no one else? Katrina asked.
I'll go, came a voice from the back of the group.
It was Edgar Cervantes. His cousin Ramon stepped up beside him.
Me too, Ramon said.
I'm in, said Jaideep.
Vish looked at his brother.
What? Man, no, we aren't ready.
You'll never be fully ready, Katrina said. We're jumping from 5,000 feet, which means you will only have to be in the air a few seconds before pulling your chute.
That's it, Jaideep said.
Sounds easy enough to me.
Sounds like a death wish, Vish exclaimed. Come on, bro. You can't seriously be thinking about this. Did you not hear what's down there?
We all die sometime, Edgar said.
If you're coming with me, suit up and be ready in 20 minutes, Katrina said. We're diving as soon as the ship's in position.
She made her way over to the crates and lockers on the opposite bulkhead. Her gear was in the center crate, and she stopped to pull it out. It had been a while since she donned the armor and parachute. Suiting up, she cinched the straps two notches tighter. Over the past few months, she had dropped over 20 pounds. The thought reminded her of the child she had lost, and her heart ached from the pain. Sometimes pain was the motivation she needed, especially for what came next. She looked at the launch doors as she secured her armor. Vish was right. Jumping into the rogue storm and battling robots designed specifically to kill humans sounded like a death wish. But she had a duty to her friends. She had gotten them into this mess, but was risking more lives the right move? The answer, she realized, was yes. What she wouldn't do was send these green divers without a leader. Today, she was that leader. If she died, Bronson and her crew had their orders to get deliverance back to the Hive. She put her helmet on, clicked it into place, and moved over to the weapons locker. Behind her, Jaideep, Trey, Edgar, and Ramon were getting suited up. Vish watched nervously, arms folded across his chest.
Everyone grab an automatic rifle, she said. We're going to need the firepower.
An alarm blared through the launch bay.
Beginning our descent, Bronson announced over the comm line. Everyone go to your designated shelter.
The airship trembled, and Katrina steadied herself against the locker in front of her.
You heard the man, she said, directing her gaze at the divers who had not suited up. If you're not jumping, get to your shelter.
Vish sucked in a breath but didn't move.
It's okay, bro, Jaideep said. I'm gonna be fine.
and if not, I'll see you on the other side."
He reached out and gave Veesh a fierce hug. Katrina watched as she pushed shotgun shells into the bandolier around her thigh. In a few minutes, Helldivers were probably going to die. She just prayed they would save more lives than they lost and recover the Navy vessel she had risked so much for. It was the only way to take the Metal Islands. 16. The door wasn't going to hold even with Les's body braced against it. The machine on the other side rammed it again, and he staggered backward into a lab table. A twinge of pain ran through his back where the armor had smacked against the rounded edge. He fired the rifle at the robot trying to break its way through the barricaded glass windows. The door exploded off the hinges, sailing past him and crashing into another lab workstation. He pivoted to fire on the AI that stormed into the room, orange visor and mouth glowing like a portal to hell. Rounds peppered the metal face, denting and contorting the humanoid features. Les emptied the magazine, hoping one of the bullets would penetrate the metal shell, but the thing kept coming. An electronic chirp came from the open mouth as if it were trying to speak. But these AIs didn't have voices like Timothy Pepper. At least, Les hadn't heard them try to communicate using anything other than their electronic wails. He slung his rifle and unholstered the venerable .45 caliber M1911 pistol. An orange light blazed out of the machine's visor, tracking him as he moved. There was no way to get out of the lab without getting hit by a laser bolt. Crouching down, he raised his pistol and fired a round into the machine's open mouth. It shook violently, still standing, but dropping the weapon. Sparks exploded out of its orange visor and mouth, and it fell to both knees, where it wobbled a moment, before slumping over on its side. The orange battery unit dimmed and blinked off.
"So they can die."
"I killed one!" Les yelled over the comms. "I fucking killed one!" The sound of mechanical joints filled the hallway outside the broken door, cutting his celebration short. Les holstered the pistol and picked up the laser rifle by a curved olive rail with iron sights mounted to the center of the black barrel. It was light, about the same weight as a blaster, and not much bigger. He held it like a rifle and quickly checked for a magazine, but saw nothing extending from the bottom or side of the weapon. He wasn't sure how many bolts remained, but even one was a gift he wouldn't pass up. The route back through the labs took him a few minutes to navigate. Even with the sporadic working lights, the rooms looked different from when he came through hours ago. He wasn't sure where Layla and Michael were, but with Michael's injuries, they couldn't have gotten far. It was amazing the young commander could walk at all after hitting the water so hard and then losing his arm. Les checked over his shoulder one last time before entering the next lab. The other robots were coming through the open doorway, and the orange glow pulsed into the open space. Shadows rushed in with the light. Several of the machines were on all fours, moving like dogs. The sight made him gasp, but he managed to aim the laser rifle at the closest robot and pull the trigger. The bolt sizzled through the air and hit it in the back. Animal bones exploded, and sparks flew. Another orange light fizzled out. He fired again, holding the trigger down this time to fire a laser that cut off the leg of another robot and sliced the lab station behind it in half. The next trigger squeeze clicked, and he felt the heat coming off the muzzle of the barrel through his gloved hands. It was either overheated or out of bolts. He turned and ran as the other three machines approached. One hurtled a lab counter and slammed into a desk, sending the furniture crashing into a wall. The electronic howling grew louder. The machines were getting frustrated. A flurry of lasers sizzled through the air, leaving white-hot incisions wherever they touched. One came dangerously close to his helmet, shooting past his right side. The noise of their ethereal wails hurt his ears, but there was no blocking it out. He ran into the next hallway, hopping over the mummified corpses that littered the floor. Then he flattened his body and squeezed through the metal barricade.
"I've got multiple contacts heading toward the front entrance," Aaron said over the comms. "Better sit tight, Layla, and let me take them down."
The message echoed in Les's helmet. They were being flanked. But where had the other robots come from?
"Hold your fire. You'll just draw them to your position," Layla said. "I'll hunker down with Michael. Les, where are you?"
"On my way topside. I got several pursuers."
"That's my goal," Aaron said. "I'll buy you some time." Les almost halted when he heard her voice.
she was going to sacrifice herself.
No, Michael said. Hold your fire, Aaron. That's an order.
Sorry, sir, but some orders are meant to be broken. Good luck to you. If there is an afterlife, I'll save you a spot.
The line fizzled out. Les bolted down the hallway, gripping the laser rifle, ready to enter the fray topside. It was up to him now to save his friends, but he would have to be smart and lucky. Distant gunshots rang out as he made his way down the second hallway to the garage. Electronic wails answered, along with the crack, crack of return laser fire. Aaron had shut her channel off, leaving Les, Layla, and Michael no way to contact her. She couldn't even hear them if they tried to send a message. He made it to the garage a few minutes later and entered with the weapon aimed outside. The barrel had cooled, and he could only hope it would fire when he needed it. Gunfire cracked from the piers, and he hurried to the open door to see a half dozen of the machines walking toward the ITC ship, their orange battery units glowing in the dark like handheld lanterns. They didn't seem to be in any hurry. Several of them, armed with laser rifles, fired at the stern where Aaron stood firing down on them. She ducked as a bolt sliced the air where her helmet had been the second before. Les almost screamed at her to run, but he couldn't compromise his position if his plan was to work, especially since the machines all had their backs to him. He was moving out of the garage when a door on one of the armored vehicles creaked open. Layla hopped out and motioned at Les. Lying across the back seat was Michael, his stump wrapped with a bandage.
"Help me with him," she whispered.
Gunfire continued in the distance as Les lowered his gun and grabbed Michael. He was unconscious, and Layla needed help getting him to the Navy ship. It was their only way off this concrete island.
"Hold on, Aaron. We're coming."
If anyone could handle herself in a fight, it was tough as nails, Aaron. The sound of moving metal came from the hallway. Les let go of Michael and aimed his laser rifle out of the open door, peering down the iron sights and waiting for a shot. A moment later, one of the robots emerged in the flickering light. Les fired a bolt into the center of the AI's forehead. The thin blue line bored an instant tunnel all the way through the artificial brain or circuits or whatever the hell was inside the head and right out the back of the metal skull to the open elevator shaft 50 yards beyond. That was when Les saw the orange light rising up the shaft.
"We have to get out of here," he said, listening to the approach of what sounded like dozens of the machines.
The place was a freaking factory of killer AIs. Michael suddenly shot up on the seat inside the vehicle, gasping for air. Les turned just as Layla pulled a needle out of his leg.
"Adrenaline," she said. "Come on, Tin. We've got to get to that ship."
He looked at Layla and Les in turn, then at his arm for a second as if to make sure it wasn't just all a bad dream.
"You're okay," Les said. "Let's go, Commander."
Michael didn't need to be told twice. He jumped out onto the concrete as Les ran back to the door.
"Where are you going?" Layla shouted.
He fired a bolt at the open elevator shaft, showering sparks down on the machines climbing the vertical walls. Then he grabbed the gun the terminated machine had dropped and fired off two more blasts at three approaching robots on his right. They returned fire, blowing smoldering holes into the floor. He slammed the door and locked it before taking off after Layla and Michael. Lightning flashed overhead, and the boom of thunder shook the piers.
"Layla!"
Les shouted when he got outside. She was just around the corner of the garage.
"I'll meet you at the ship,"
he said, tossing the second laser weapon to her.
"See if you can get it up and running with your computer and extra battery."
Layla nodded.
"Good luck."
"Good luck." She kept moving around the curved structure. Michael managed to say between groans of pain,
"Help, Aaron."
For a moment, he seemed to be trying to pull away from Layla and come with Les, but she put his remaining arm over her shoulder. The hallway door inside the garage creaked, and electronic wails projected out of the room. Three of the machines on the pier stopped and turned in Les's direction while the other three kept shooting at Aaron. The robots looking at Les were wearing bone armor too, and one even had a human jaw attached to its face. The jaw moved, and the same electronic noise burst from the mechanical mouth. It was as if they're talking to one another, Les realized. Aaron continued raining bullets down on the pack. Not bothering to move for cover, they stood their ground and returned fire.
Blue laser bolts punched through the ship's rusted hull as if it were cardboard.
"Keep your head down, Aaron."
Les dropped to one knee, aimed the weapon with both hands, and squeezed off a single bolt. The laser zipped through the air, just over the head of a machine that had dropped to all fours. The other two machines, both without laser weapons, ran toward him. Lightning forked through the sky, hitting the ocean. Les aimed again, holding the trigger down to fire a longer bolt that took off the top of a metal skull. His next shot went through the chest of the machine with a human jaw, sending it crashing to the ground. It quickly pushed itself back up. He centered the barrel at the head to finish it off, but the trigger pull ended with an empty click. Smoke rose off the glowing barrel. The third machine suddenly stopped running toward Les and stood on both feet. The downed robot directed an orange visor toward the sky. The other three robots all stopped firing at Aaron and also looked toward the storm clouds. Les aimed his weapon, waiting for the gun to cool. A message crackled from the speakers, but he didn't understand Layla's transmission. It sounded like the Helldiver's motto. "We dive, so humanity survives." But why the hell would Layla be saying it right now? Thunder grumbled overhead. He pulled the trigger again, but still it wouldn't fire. The sky suddenly rained blue orbs. Five of them.
"Pull your chutes!" yelled a voice over the comms.
Les stared in awe at the sky, where a parachute suddenly bloomed out under the cloud cover. Then another, and another. All but one of the chutes fired and spread black canopies.
"Katrina came for us," he whispered.
His speakers crackled with the deep voice that had to be Edgar Cervantes.
"Ramon!"
he yelled. Les watched a body tumbling through the air. It smacked into the ocean several hundred yards out from the piers. The machines with weapons raised them toward the sky and fired off bolt after bolt. Several of them tore through chutes, sending the novice divers careening through the air. Les aimed his weapon at the robots.
"Over here, assholes!" he yelled.
This time, the trigger pull fired a bolt. The laser traveled through the central chest slot of the machine and the battery exploded in a fiery blast, all but tearing the robot in half. The other machines all looked in Les's direction. He swallowed. At least he had distracted them from the other divers. Aaron stood above the rail, which was sliced through and glowing from laser hits. He hit the deck, rolled, and returned fire. A diver was already coming in hot over the pier, performing a two-stage flare with such grace it had to be Katrina. She ran out the momentum, passing Les as he kept firing bolts. Timing his shots, he tried to keep the gun from overheating again. Aaron stuck her rifle over the side of the ship, screaming as she fired.
"Eat this, you walking shit cans!"
She squeezed off three round bursts from side to side.
"You want some? Come on, swallow this!"
Gunfire erupted behind Les, and Katrina ran up beside him with her rifle shouldered.
"Good to see you're still alive," she yelled.
Les said the first thing that came to mind.
"Where's Trey?" "Not sure, but his beacon's still active."
The reassuring words energized Les. He came up on one knee and took down another machine on the piers with a shot to the neck. The partially severed head craned to the side, sparks shooting from the wound.
"Focus your fire on their heads," Les yelled.
Aaron and Katrina slowed their rate of fire, the sporadic cracks echoing amid the boom of thunder and cries of the machines. The two remaining enemies both went down, their skull armor broke into pieces. They squirmed as Les finished them off with laser bolts. The final AI twitched on the ground before going limp, the orange lights fizzling out like coals in the rain. Les stood and scanned the sky above the ITC ship where Aaron was busy changing a magazine. Three more divers were still in the air, but the wind, damaged canopies, and inexperience had taken them all off course. Two floated overhead toward Red Sphere. The third was coming down near the destroyed robots.
"Trey, where are you?"
Les shouted.
"Dad, I'm over the ship, but I can't slow down."
Les turned to see his son sail right over the ITC ship, about 200 feet above Aaron. She too looked up as he passed overhead.
"Do the two-stage flare like we trained you," Les said. "Wait till you're about 8 feet off the deck, then pull both toggles down hard, but not all the way, to slow your descent. Then when you level out, pull the toggles slow the rest of the way down to stop your forward motion."
Movement on the deck pulled Les's eyes off Trey.
"Behind you!" Aaron yelled.
Bolts hit the deck just right of Les and Katrina. She rolled away from the laser fire, but Les stayed put. One of the machines he had knocked down was getting back up with a weapon raised. A bolt sizzled past Les's head as he pulled the trigger. The same moment the machine fired a bolt into the sky.
"No!"
Les shouted. He lowered his gun as the robot dropped, smoldering. Les's eyes jerked upward, searching the sky for his son, but the AI's laser bolt had not been meant for Trey. An object the size of a melon dropped over the side of the ship near the stern. It took Les a moment to register what he was seeing. Aaron's headless corpse, still standing on the deck, slumped against the rail, then toppled over. Her helmet, with her head inside, clattered onto the concrete and rolled a few feet. Trey's boots hit the pier a moment later, between the ship and Les. The boy quickly lost control, running and then tumbling head over feet.
"Covering fire!"
Katrina shouted. Les, still in shock, finally turned to fire on the machines streaming out of the building. Aaron was gone, but maybe he could still save the others. Katrina was on one knee fighting desperately, firing calculated bursts. One of the divers had landed on the roof of Red Sphere and opened fire from above. The final diver was nowhere in sight. Six robots strode out of the garage, firing bolts in all directions. Les heard one crackle in the air just over his head. He was giving them too big a target, so he dropped to his belly. His first three shots took down a machine, and fire erupted from its innards. His weapon clicked on the next squeeze. Overheated again. He switched to his rifle and aimed a burst at the mouth of one of the remaining five machines standing just outside the entrance to the garage. Bolts cut through the air, separating Les and Katrina. They both rolled out of the way and into each other. Les glanced up, expecting a bolt to his face. He heard something streak over their heads, followed by a thunderous boom that seemed to come from both the Red Sphere garage and the ocean. The explosion tore the machines standing there to scrap metal, and they vanished in the fiery blast. The diver on the roof fell backward. Les had already grabbed Katrina and pulled her to the left, where they tumbled over the side of the pier and into the water. Kicking back to the surface, he pulled himself onto the dock, where he saw a Navy ship rounding the piers.
"Got the ship working," Layla said over the open channel. "Anyone want a ride out of this charming place?"
Pushing himself up, Les ran to help untangle Trey, who was shouting for help on the pier, his chute on fire. Katrina rushed over to help. They released the chute and put out the flames on his legs. By the time they had him out, Edgar and Jaideep were running across the platform toward the pier.
"You okay?" Les asked Trey.
The boy sat up and managed a nod.
"The suit saved me."
Katrina looked to the left, where Aaron's headless corpse lay in her blood, which was pooling underneath her due to a broken bone that protruded through her suit. Trey lowered his helmet in despair. Running footfalls came from behind them. Jaideep arrived, panting, his arm around Edgar, who was gripping his side.
"Where's my cousin? Does anyone know what happened to Ramon?"
Edgar's words trailed off when he saw Aaron's body.
"His beacon went off in the storm. I'm sorry," Katrina said. "There's nothing we can do for him or Aaron now."
"He's hurt," Jaideep said.
Edgar unslung his arm from the diver's shoulder.
"I'm fine."
But Les could see that Edgar wasn't fine. Shards of metal stuck out of his chest armor, and another piece protruded from his belly where blood was seeping out. Katrina pointed her chin at the cruiser, which was moving into position along the pier.
"Let's go, divers."
17. The waves crashed against the Sea Wolf's bow, sending up plumes of spray. Magnolia tightened the strap against her chest and looked over at X.
"The sails will hold," he reassured her.
"But what about our friends?" she asked. "Will they be okay?"
X sighed.
I don't know, but there's nothing we can do for them right now."
"So we just have to sit here and wait to hear from Katrina?"
He gave a silent nod. Magnolia shook her head sadly. X had spent a decade on the surface waiting to be rescued, but she couldn't wait a few hours to hear about her friends. That was the difference between them, and why he had survived all this time.
Her mind replayed Katrina's transmission from an hour earlier. Team Raptor is under attack by unknown hostiles. The guilt filled her with dread. If they died, it was on her. She had sent the information that encouraged the captain to send divers here, and it had been a trap. The next transmission explained what Team Raptor was facing at Red Sphere.
AIs, she said quietly. I just can't believe it's true.
Pepper, you got some explaining to do,
X growled under his breath.
Seems to me like you're hiding stuff from us, and if I find out...
He made a cracking sound with his tongue to mimic a snapping neck. Sir, I assure you, if I had known that Red Sphere was compromised by those machines, I would have informed you, and my counterpart on the Hive would have informed Captain DeVita as well. X looked at Magnolia. Neither of them had told Pepper his counterpart was shut down, and she wasn't about to.
Your counterpart is offline, Pepper. And I'm about to fry your hard drive, too, unless you start talking.
Timothy paused for 2 full seconds before responding to X's words. I don't know how else to explain this. Whatever records existed must have been destroyed during the blackout. X didn't look convinced, and Magnolia certainly wasn't.
You heard some of those transmissions from Red Sphere, Magnolia said. Explain to me why AIs would wear human and animal bones. That doesn't sound like a machine thing to do, but I suppose it takes one to know one.
Timothy paused again.
Spill it, Pepper, or you're going to sleep forever, X said.
CEO Tyron Red built one type of machine that was top secret, Timothy replied. This particular hybrid model was commissioned by the military, and a small supply of 200 units were purchased in the year 2040. They were named Def 9. And were designed to hunt and kill enemies. The model looks humanoid, but they are far different from other units built to fight alongside human soldiers in times of war.
Show us, Magnolia said.
One moment.
What does Def 9 stand for? X asked.
Defense Unit 9. This was the 9th version of the machine, Timothy replied. X and Magnolia exchanged another glance. The metal hatch covering the broken windshield rattled as the bow slapped down hard off a wave. She tried to relax in her seat, but the constant rocking and shaking were making her ill. The lump on her head didn't help. The swelling had gone down, but a migraine had settled behind her right eye, and it made her entire head pulse. While they waited, Magnolia studied X in the weak light emanating from the control panel on the dashboard. The faint glow illuminated his features. And she could see his age now more than ever. The scars lining his face like tattoos, the crow's feet framing the dark eyes that had seen more horrors of the real world than anyone else alive. All those horrors and all his experience would have driven an average man mad or killed him. But not X. He had the heart of a warrior, and in some ways a saint. She saw it in the way he gently patted Miles on the head, and the way he always put others before himself. The bond he shared with the dog made Magnolia envious. She had never been that close to anyone over the years, whether friend or family. Everyone she loved had been lost to the apocalyptic world, and when she finally opened her heart to Roger, he too had died.
How far out are we, Pepper? X asked. This tin coffin can't take much more of this pounding.
At our current speed, our target destination of the western edge of the Virgin Islands should take another 45 minutes, assuming the wind remains at...
All right, got it, Pepper, thanks.
X took the controls.
I've got it from here.
Wait, sir, I thought you wanted to see photos of the di...
We do, Magnolia interrupted.
A beeping came from the dashboard. Magnolia looked at a monitor displaying an old-world video of a factory. An assembly line of humanoid-shaped robots rolled out on a conveyor belt inside a massive room with a high ceiling.
These are the Def 9 units, Timothy said. As you can see, this is in the beginning stages of their design.
Robotic arms along the track welded parts on the frame as the machines continued down the line. Anatomically shaped plates were applied to their extremities and torsos, making them look a bit like Roman warriors from the picture books. Visors were fastened over the slits where their eyes would have been.
Finally, a battery unit was inserted into the chest socket. It flickered on, emanating an orange glow that also flickered out the mouth and visor.
"The DEF-9 units were built for one purpose," said Timothy, "to kill their enemies in barbaric ways to strike fear in future enemies. Here's a video I found in the archives of a pre-war mission." A video showing three of the machines in a jungle came online. Their plated bodies were covered in camouflage and something else.
"What are they wearing?" Magnolia whispered.
The machines slunk through dense foliage surrounding a small fishing village set on a coastal beach. Smoke billowed out of chimneys into the sky as robots fanned out. A fourth robot's video feed captured the scene. Numbers and data scrolled across the bottom of the screen. X leaned closer to the monitor.
"Is that human flesh?"
Magnolia looked closer, confirming the answer with a nod. All the machines were wearing bloody patches of skin over their armored bodies. Blood and mud dripped down their metallic hides. The pack entered the village, screeching in electronic frequencies as they approached a group of men and women standing around an open fire and roasting what looked like a pig. The first robot grabbed a man reaching for a rifle and tore his arm off in a single pull. Screams followed, both human and electronic. None of the machines used the weapons attached to their extremities. They didn't need them. Their powerful hands were all they needed to tear the first group of humans limb from limb. They quickly moved into the village. A shirtless man with a shotgun emerged from one of the huts. He fired off several shots, but the bullets only dented the armor. The closest machine picked the man up by the throat and with its other hand ripped away his nose and face like a hunk of cheese. Then it dropped the still twitching man and smoothed the skin over its metal face. The video feed from the fourth machine zoomed in on the glowing orange eyes that burned through the eye holes of the stolen face.
"Katrina sent Tin, Layla, and Giraffe to a place with these things?" X snorted. "What was she thinking?"
Magnolia remembered to exhale. The guilt continued to sink through her as she watched the machines sweep through the village, slaughtering anyone they came across, even the children and animals.
"We have to turn around and head back for Cuba," she said. "We can't leave them to die there."
"You don't get it, do you?" X said.
He looked up at the overhead.
"Pepper, how far away from Red Sphere are we, and how long will it take to get there?"
"Approximately 740 miles away. At this speed, it would take us about 34 hours to reach Red Sphere, assuming the damaged main mass doesn't break. If that occurs, then..."
"We get it," X said. "They won't last another hour out there if they don't escape. But there's nothing we can do. Their fate rests in Katrina's hands. Only she can save them. But doing so would likely put deliverance at risk if she tries to lower through that storm they reported on the dive-in."
Magnolia saw the pain in his eyes, the despair. She felt it too.
"You killed your friends," she said to herself.
"I'm going to see if I can get hold of Katrina," X said. He picked up the radio handset. "Deliverance, this is the Seawolf. Do you copy?"
Static crackled. He looked over at Magnolia again, but she turned to wipe away a tear. The video continued playing on screen, but she tapped the monitor to shut it off. She couldn't bear to watch anymore.
"Deliverance, this is X aboard the Seawolf. Do you copy? Over."
"Roger, this is Ensign White. Go ahead, X."
"Where's Captain DeVita?"
"She's not here, sir."
"What do you mean, not here?"
X's brows scrunched together, almost closing the gap left by the scar.
"She dived to the surface with several other divers," Bronson replied gruffly.
"What?" Magnolia said.
"Captain DeVita dived to help the other divers."
X lowered his head in defeat.
"Have you heard anything from them?"
"A negative. They've been out of radio contact for about an hour now. How are things on the open water?"
"Shitty."
"Stay safe out there, Commander. You're our last hope."
X slammed the handset against its cradle, startling Miles and making Magnolia flinch.
"This is why I didn't fucking want them going to Cuba," he yelled. "Now Katrina is putting her life in jeopardy, God damn it!"
It was the second such outburst Magnolia had seen, but this time, she deserved it and more. She remained calm, holding his fiery gaze.
"I'm sorry," she said.
He snorted again and wiped his nose on his sleeve.
"Sorry don't cut it, kid."
He unlocked his harness and stood.
"Flesh guns won't do shit against those AIs. Their only chance of survival is using their boosters to get back through the storm, and those ain't good odds."
X stormed toward the hatch.
"Where are you going?" she asked.
"For some fresh air."
"It's a monsoon out there."
Miles got up and followed X out into the passageway, but he turned and said,
"Sit and stay."
The dog obeyed and watched his handler leave, letting out a low whine.
"Don't do that, Miles," X said over his shoulder as he climbed the ladder to the second deck, vanishing from sight.
A hatch opened and slammed shut, and a few minutes later, the hatch of the staging room opened and slammed. Magnolia tried to control her breathing. She felt as though she might throw up. After counting to 10, she tried to meditate, but nothing worked. She was definitely going to be sick. Unbuckling her harness, she decided to go back to her quarters. She grabbed a plastic pail and made it out to the passageway before throwing up. She got down on both knees, her stomach roiling and wrenching. The acid burned her mouth. She vomited a second time. A hatch opened above and closed again, and footfalls clicked above her. She clutched her stomach with one hand and closed her eyes to block out the stars floating before her vision. Behind her, Miles let out another whine. The dog nudged up by her side, sniffing and then licking the salt off her arm.
"Mags!" X shouted. "Mags, get up here!"
She opened her eyes to see him looking down from the staging area.
"Kid, you gotta see this shit. Hurry!"
She wiped her mouth off with her fist and stopped in the bathroom to dump the pail of vomit. Then she grabbed a drink of water and slogged down the passage to the ladder. Climbing made her dizzy, and by the time she got to the staging room, she was seeing stars again. X was waiting there and helped her up.
"You okay?"
he asked.
"No."
"You still gotta see this."
He led her to the hatch and opened it. Then he stepped back and gestured for her to go outside. The waves were still slamming the boat, but the rain had stopped. She blinked and raised a hand to shield her eyes from the bright gray sky. Maybe she really was seeing things now. X was suiting up behind her. She could hear the clanking of armor, but she didn't turn. Her eyes were on the sky and the rays of gold streaking down to the surface. The tar-colored waves had magically turned teal green, water so clear she could see through it. The ocean wasn't black after all.
"Is it real?" she asked.
X laughed.
"I sure as hell hope so."
"Aaron,"
Michael moaned. He tried to move the stump of his right arm, but pain ripped up his shoulder.
"Don't move," Layla said.
Her voice carried strength, but Michael could tell by the worry on her face that she was close to tears. They had lost Aaron and Ramon back at Red Sphere, and he was in bad shape. It still hadn't quite hit him that the arm was gone, but perhaps that was due to the pain.
"Where the hell are the medical supplies?" she said as she rifled drawers and cabinets throughout the room.
Edgar sat on a bed without a mattress across the medical bay, his head bowed, dreadlocks curtaining his face. Blood had dried on his armored chest and leg pads. Michael wasn't sure how bad the injuries were, but Edgar wasn't complaining.
"How you doing?"
Michael asked. Edgar brushed the locks away from his face.
"Ramon's dead. He didn't even have a chance." "I'm sorry, brother."
Michael let his words trail off, not knowing what else to say. Edgar rubbed his forehead.
"I can't believe he's gone. Just like that. I couldn't do anything to help him."
His eyes met Michael's.
"I'm sorry about your cousin, but there's nothing you could have done. Just like there wasn't anything we could do for Aaron. We're helldivers, and helldivers die. She knew the risk."
He stopped himself short of saying that Ramon had known the risks, too. Now wasn't the time, and the pain in his shoulder made it hard to concentrate.
"I'm sorry about Erin," Edgar said. "I know she was your friend, Commander."
"She was a true Helldiver," Michael said. He wasn't that close to Erin, not as close as Les, but he had liked her. Even after Florida, when she came back with attitude and a chip on her shoulder. Not that Michael blamed her. He had felt the same way after his father died on the surface. He drew in a breath, blinked at the bright overhead light, and closed his eyes. Every time he did, he saw the image of the machine with the cow skull firing a laser through his arm. Knowing that it was still back at Red Sphere lying on the concrete stairwell was an odd feeling. A piece of him, an important piece of his body that had been with him his entire life. Layla continued going through the cabinets on the bulkheads, cursing, opening and slamming them, and cursing some more. "There's nothing here," she said. "It's all been raided." Michael looked over, groaning. The pain was deep inside his arm, as if his bone marrow were on fire. Sweat beaded on his forehead. He swallowed and tried to relax on the hard bed. The hatch squealed open, and Les ducked through the entryway, his brick-red tufts scraping the metal arch. "Commander Everhart," he said. "How are you feeling?" Michael tried to hold still. He was close to hyperventilating from the pain, but he managed to nod. "The laser cauterized the wound, fortunately," Layla said. "But we need to find something soon to prevent infection. Same thing for Edgar. He's got shrapnel wounds from the blast."
"It ain't nothing," Edgar said.
Layla shot him a sideways glance.
"It'll be something if it gets infected."
"I'll check with the others to see if they have anything in their gear," Les said.
"Where are the others?" she replied.
"Trey and Jaideep are patrolling and searching the other decks to make sure the ship is clear. Katrina's on the bridge."
"How are we doing on power?" Layla said, still going through drawers. "Didn't look good when I got the ship running earlier."
"It's not." Les hesitated, scratching the red stubble on his chin.
"This vessel runs off 4 nuclear fuel cells. Looks like they're all around a 10% charge. Not sure how long that will last us. And we have a major problem. The satellite uplink we were using to connect with Deliverance got left on Red Sphere in our escape."
Layla looked up.
"So we have no way of contacting Deliverance?"
"Correct." Michael gritted his teeth and sat up on the bed.
"So what's Katrina's plan?" he asked.
"She said we sail until we can break through the electrical disturbance and contact Deliverance with our helmet comms."
Edgar gripped his belly and walked over from his bed to Michael's bedside while Layla moved to a rack of lockers. She pulled on one of the handles, grunting.
"Come on, you worthless pile of junk!"
The handle broke off in her hand, and she staggered backward. Then she gave the door a kick with her steel-toed boot, making a loud bang. The doors popped open, revealing several shelves stacked with medical supplies.
"Here we go," she whispered.
Michael gritted his teeth through another wave of pain. This time, though, the aches seemed to be coming from the arm that was no longer there. But how could that be?
Phantom pains.
Tears stung his eyes. The dull ache was worse than anything he had experienced yet. He blinked the tears away, taking in deep breaths until he was hyperventilating.
"Hold on, Tin, I think I found something," Layla said.
"I'll go see if there are any med packs upstairs," Les said. A tall figure ducked through the hatch before he could leave. Trey walked into the room and said,
"Ship is clear of life forms and AIs, but we're still searching the lower decks for supplies."
"I wonder what happened to the original crew," Layla said.
"Probably landed at Red Sphere like we did, not knowing the defectors were inside," Les replied.
"But how did the machines get there? And why didn't they ever leave if killing humans is their purpose?"
"No humans left to kill, maybe," Layla said. "All that matters is they don't have a way to follow us. No one saw any aircraft back there, right?"
Les shook his head.
"None at all."
"I have to get back to patrol, but I wanted to check on the commander," Trey said. He walked over to Michael and took his left hand.
"You okay, brother?"
Michael swallowed again and tried to nod. Layla walked back to his bedside with a bottle of gel. It's really old, but the container is still sealed.
Michael blinked through more tears to take a look at the bottle. The gel was the same kind they used in place of sutures to seal deep wounds and prevent infection, and it burned like hell. She slowly unwrapped his bandage to the scent of burned flesh. He craned his neck to look down at the wound.
"Look at me, Tin," Layla said.
The ship groaned slightly, and the overhead light flickered as they changed course. Layla put on a pair of plastic gloves and squeezed out some of the gel on a finger.
"This is going to burn pretty bad, Michael. You might even black out."
Trey squeezed Michael's left hand.
"If I do, tell Katrina I know what we have to do," he said.
"What's that?"
"We have to find the Sea Wolf."
18. Multiple contacts. Timothy's words crackled from the speaker system in the staging room, forcing X's eyes away from the most beautiful sight he had ever seen through the open hatch. The sun could wait. "Two vessels," Timothy confirmed. X should have known it was a bit early to celebrate. A place like this would be heavily protected, and he had a feeling it was the Cazadores doing the protecting. The rapid beating of his heart was no longer from joy. He wasn't ready for this. They weren't ready for this. Magnolia's wide eyes suggested she felt the same, but she knew what to do. She hurried over to the rack where she stored her gear and began putting on her armor.
"Where, Pepper?" X asked.
"Due east, about 3 nautical miles out and moving at only about 10 knots. X grabbed his rifle, opened the hatch, and slipped outside. For the first time in his entire life, the sky wasn't cloaked in darkness. To the east, planks of gold streamed through an opening in the electrical storm like a portal to another world. As much as he wanted to stare, he moved in a hurry to the mainmast. Grabbing the rungs, he started up to the crow's nest for a better view of whoever had spotted them, although he had a fair idea. The wind whistled around his armor and bit into his suit. The sail blocked his view to the east, right where these mysterious contacts were coming from. Halfway up, his boot slipped off the narrow, wet rung, and he lost his grip. Hanging from one arm, he watched a magazine fall from his vest and clatter onto the deck below. He swung his hand back up and grabbed the rung.
"Come on, old man."
The spear and attached line were just above him, and he swung right to get past. As he reached up for the crow's nest rail, his eyes went to his HUD.
"It can't be."
The temperature was 70 degrees Fahrenheit, and there was virtually no trace of radiation. This isolated spot of what many would call heaven wasn't there for the taking, though. In the distance, 2 boats powered toward them, leaving a trail of engine smoke behind them. X jumped into the crow's nest and unslung his rifle. Another smaller boat with a single rider led the 2 larger craft.
3 contacts.
X zoomed in on the small boat, which had handlebars and looked like a seagoing motorcycle. Goggles covered the rider's face, and long black hair flew over his shoulders. Green and brown clothing rippled in the wind, and the barrel of a slung rifle rose over his back. This didn't look like one of the Cazadores he had seen in Florida. X moved his optics to the larger of the 2 big boats, a rust bucket that looked worse than some of the wrecks in the Turks and Caicos. Canvas tarps covered the bow, and fishing poles hung from the afterdeck. A cracked glass window obscured the cabin and the 2 people piloting the vessel. It had an old-world engine, the kind that ran on gasoline and not fuel cells. It was as if the Sea Wolf had gone through a time machine and entered the old world. He studied the men for a few more seconds. Several of them wore some sort of breathing apparatus, but none of them had on the massive suits of armor he remembered from Florida. For a fleeting moment, he thought that maybe he had found other survivors, people that the passengers of the Hive and Deliverance might live in harmony with. Then he saw the octopus logo on the helm of the 2nd boat, just like the one he'd seen tattooed in El Pulpo's forehead and engraved in his chest armor. There would be no living in harmony with these bastards.
"What do you see?" Magnolia shouted from the deck below.
"Nothing pretty," he yelled back.
He continued scanning the vessel. This one wasn't a fishing boat. It looked more like what he had seen in Florida. Many years ago, people had called them
yachts. They were built for the rich. But this one wasn't in much better condition than the other boat. The hull had been stripped of paint and then branded with an image of a purple octopus stretching its arms across the rusty surface. Two men, both wearing helmets,